Welcome, everyone. Authenticity is one of the core principles of my book, Rewired, and I'm a big believer in the importance of being true to yourself. My guest today, David Ratchford, is an example of how authenticity improves our lives in so many ways. David is the creator and host of The Better Human Show, which takes a holistic view of our health and wellness. David's here to talk to us today about his inspiring journey, how he connected with his true self, and how he uses his gut compass to guide him through life. He will also discuss how his journey got him in touch with his true self and put him on a path of openness, forgiveness, and happiness. David, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you on.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so you have a podcast called The Better Human Show. It's about personal development, health, fitness, relationships, how we can give back to our community. How did this get started? And can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, what inspired you?
Yeah, so I've always been a big fan of personal development. And there was a point in my life, it was about 5 years ago, when I realized that I was just not living up to my own potential. And I found myself just being unhappy. And I realized that when I looked deep into my life, there were a few things that I was doing and not doing that were no longer in accordance or in alignment. I like to use the word congruent with my values.
Yeah.
And so when I looked at where I was not being congruent, and it was that discord that caused me my unhappiness. And so I looked around in my life and I said, you know, I'm unhappy because I'm not pursuing growth, because growth is a value of mine. You know, it's challenging my ideas and becoming as good of a human being as possible. And I'm happiest when, for example, I'm physically active. And during this time when I was not feeling good, I was very inactive and, you know, lethargic. So, one of my values is health and fitness. And here I was poisoning my body with alcohol, prescription narcotics, and I'm super ashamed to admit it, but even cigarettes, you know, and nicotine. And as a former athlete who then found myself, like, you know, I wouldn't say victim of my addictions, but I certainly was, I had imprisoned myself by the choices that I had made, and they weren't in alignment with my values, but my actions were not backing up what my mind was saying was important to me. And
absolutely.
So that's why...
And mm-hmm.
Yeah, so as I was looking through these key areas in my life, for example, another value of mine was pursuing beauty or seeking out beauty in nature. And I'm sure you've probably shared some of the results of how depression can be a result of not having nature and sunlight and the sky in your life. And, you know, there I was, you know, kind of holed up in my you know, condo and or office during the workday, and not getting out and doing the things that I wanted to do, and had always had a self-image of, like, being an outdoorsman and a hiker and somebody who enjoys, you know, fishing and nature. And I wasn't doing that. So so I created The Better Human Show just to really explore that idea of growth and look at all areas of my development, specifically, you know, personal growth, seeking nature, being physically active, and having fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love that you're also explaining what values are in our value system, because I think a lot of us that have gone into dark periods of our life or have developed negative habits like drinking or smoking or whatever it is, or hanging out the wrong people or an addiction or dependency, sometimes we start to identify our identify with those behaviors as our overall identity. You know, we begin to think we are lazy. Maybe we don't, maybe we're really not meant to be active. Maybe this, maybe that. And that starts to become our narrative, which could be very dangerous, because I truly believe once you do change your life and enter a healthy path, or you start recovering from something, an addiction or dependency, your identity will shift. And those behaviors aren't necessarily who you are. Those are just the behaviors that came up while you were in this dark place, this depression or this addiction.
Right. And I think that's an important distinction to make, you know, and we can get into semantics. I'm a big fan of words and the words that we choose, how they matter to us. For example, you know, and let me be clear, for people who, I don't know if I'm in recovery or not. I'm currently not drinking or using any, substances other than nature and exercise, which make me feel pretty good.
That's good. That's great. Congratulations.
But I don't know if I'm in the term recovery that a lot of people in the recovery space use, because I'm currently not in a treatment program, and I'm not a 12-stepper.
But that's okay.
At least not. At least not at this point. But I do have sobriety, and that's pretty solid. But one of the things that I like to say is, you know, you can be right or correct, or you can be effective, you know. And so one of the things that I believe is, you know, for example, some people might have an idea that, hey, I've had a hard day at work, and I deserve to have a beer or a glass of wine or a bottle of wine, whatever it is. You know, I've had a really rough week. I deserve to have something, as my reward. And they would be absolutely right. They would be correct. You know, that maybe they're at a point in their life where it's not affecting their work performance. But the question that I like to ask is that the most effective use of your energy and or time? So,
right, exactly.
For example, I consider myself a problem drinker. You know, I wasn't somebody that drank all the time. I didn't usually drink before 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekend. But I did like to have a few beers, and I'm one of the people that has a fairly ineffective off switch.
Right.
So I could be somebody that said, you know, hey, I worked hard. I deserve to have a few beers. And then, you know, a few might lead to a couple more, and next thing I know, and I'm doing this in a safe way. I'm taking a cab, or I'm not putting anybody at risk, but I'm doing this in a way that, at the end of the day, I'm not being congruent with my value of being somebody who likes nature and who wants to be physically active, because the next day I don't feel like working out, you know? So I would be right in indulging myself, but I'm not being effective in being in alignment with my goals.
Right, exactly. And the thing is also, you know, when you are kind of clear on your values and you want to live a congruent life, meaning you don't want to wake up feeling like you're betraying yourself again. So like that's the thing, is whether or not you want to label it problematic drinking, dependent drinking, whatever it is, it's do you wake up in the morning and do you have that overall feeling of shame that you just betrayed yourself? Because at the end of the day, you know, you could tell yourself anything, you can minimize it to other people, you could lie about it, you could, you know, whatever that is. But if you're not really living in alignment with what's in your heart and the life that you want to live, and you keep living in a way where it just does not live up to your own standards, then that I think is a way to gauge whether you're, you know, on the right path or maybe need some readjusting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, another one of the values that comes into play is what many people call radical honesty. And, and it's being really truthful with yourself is, are my choices being congruent, and are they, do they have any bigger impact on me? And for me, it was like, you know, if I really do value being athletic and fit and feeling good, then I got to be honest with myself and say that the alcohol is not contributing to that, not in any way, shape, or form.
Right, exactly. You know, and that's a, yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
I had a conversation with my friend Shane Raymer, who runs the That Sober Guy podcast. We were talking about, you know, one of his slogans is keep your blood clean. And and one of the things was I said, you know, interesting how we'll choose to pollute our bodies with alcohol, whereas I would never consider putting bad gas in my car, you know, like I wouldn't go to the gas station and they say, okay, you've got premium, you've got regular, you've got unleaded. All of them are going to work pretty well, you know? But you can put this one in your body and it's going to totally degrade the performance for the next couple of days and could lead to some really long-term problems. And, I would never put that in my car, you know? But we don't really think about it when we're putting it into our body. And then it does, you know, result in some long-term problems. And, you know, honestly, that was one of the things that really kind of woke me up, was going to my doctor and my doctor saying, hey, you know, we need to put you on some statins or something for your blood pressure. And I'm like, wait a second. No.
Right. Wow. And that was kind of the wake up. Well, probably one of the wake up calls.
Right. Know, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
There are a lot, you know, that, you know, and when you look back and you say, oh, that's a wake up call. That's a wake up call. Mm-hmm. You know, there can be so many that when you really, when you go back and look in retrospect, you know, it's like, wait a second. It wasn't just having to buy jean sizes the next size up, you know?
Right. I mean, there's so many ways to gauge whether you are living in alignment with your true calling or your true best self or your best life. I mean, there's also the word integrity, which, you know, just as much as I love authenticity and I love that the authenticity really means being the author of your own life, which, as you know, you can create anything that you want to create. But integrity too, I think, is important for people that have had any kind of experience with self-betrayal. You know, it's not, I think, that we wake up one morning feeling like our integrity is gone, but it's the teeny tiny times that we kind of betray ourselves here and there, whether it's when the first time you smoked a cigarette at 13, like me, or, you know, the first time you lied about something, the first time you cheated on a test or whatever it was. It's all these teeny tiny things that we do throughout our lives that compromise our integrity. And then all of a sudden we wake up like, where did it go? You know? And so I think that's the way also problematic drinking or any other kind of negative behavior starts too. It's like a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit there. And then one morning you wake up or you're at the doctor or whatever happens and you're like, oh my gosh, how did this happen?
Yeah. And one of the things that was, absolutely. And the thing that I think that so many of us forget, and this is something that I really enjoyed about your book Rewired, was the chapters on forgiveness and compassion. Is that we're often so upset with ourselves when we do fall out of integrity. And sometimes those feelings, you know, like you said, shame, you know, they create a snowball effect where if, you know, it's like a slippery slope where, hey, I kind of fell off the wagon on Friday. So Saturday's gone and then Sunday's gone. And next thing you know, you're on a bender or whatever the, whatever your pattern is. But, so when we fall out of integrity, it's super important that we forgive ourselves, and be compassionate with ourselves. And like I said, you know, the expression of, being effective versus being right. Like I was looking back, I went through this exercise, I think it's in Jack Canfield's book, you know, the 30-Day Sobriety Solution, where he talks about, I think it's the Total Truth Exercise or something like that, where he talks about acknowledging your anger and resentment. And I looked at a certain area in my life where my mom was an alcoholic, and you know, she had gone through a divorce and made a bad decision of the guy that she wanted to hang out with. So she's rebelling against, you know, my dad, and trying to experience her freedom and have fun. And she was perhaps right in that, but she wasn't being an effective mother. So she was making some bad choices that had some really bad repercussions, not just for her, but as they kind of rippled through our family. And the result, and I know this is going to be a heavy topic, but the result was that she had gone out. I was about 13 years old, and she had gone out with her boyfriend, you know, probably to have a nice Friday night, whatever the Friday or Saturday night. And she had gotten in a fight with him because they were drinking heavily, and he had driven her there, but she didn't want to leave with him. And I don't know if there were no cabs, or there's certainly no Uber at this time. But she decided to walk back from the bar on the bad side of town. And during her walk, she was abducted and gang raped by several thugs. And awful. So I didn't know this. You know, I mean, all I know is that I'm just a 13-year-old boy that, you know, had to cook himself a pizza that night. You know, the next morning, my mom comes home. She shuffles into the bedroom and says, "Hey, leave me alone. I need to rest." And then at about 6 o'clock that evening, she called me in and my brother in and said, you know, explain to us what had happened. You know, got in a fight, got raped by several people and was in the hospital all night. And, you know, she was literally beaten up and left for dead. And so she had to, you know, walk to the side of the road, flag down a car, and somebody took her to the hospital, thankfully.
So sorry to hear that.
And this is, you know, and I certainly was too, and I certainly am now. The interesting, or the scary thing was that wasn't really, that might have been the wake-up call that got her sober at that time. And then she was in recovery for several months, but I don't think it happened for maybe another year, because this guy lingered around her boyfriend after, you know, he master manipulators, all that kind of stuff. And it really made me mad, though, as a 13-year-old kid. You know, it made me mad at alcohol. It made me mad at him. It made me mad at her. And as part of a forgiveness exercise, you know, I acknowledged the anger. I was right to feel anger. So I went through this whole thing where, you know, I'm angry, I'm hurt, I was afraid. And then asked, you know, for forgiveness, because I ended up being a bratty, rebellious kid, you know. And then as I went through this, you know, and this took me obviously several years to get over, I don't think I ever really forgave my mom or the dirtbag she dated. I'm still going to call him a dirtbag, but I can still forgive him for all of that happening. And, you know, the thing that was just an amazing blessing was there's freedom and forgiveness.
Right. And there's... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's just the ultimate lesson, is that sometimes these bad things can happen, but you have to forgive yourself. You have to forgive, you know, others. And that's where true liberation lies on the emotional front, is that, you know, I was right to be angry. But I also have to forgive myself for being angry and rebellious and everybody involved. And then there's this deep abiding peace that comes through that. And I can look at my mom in heaven and say, you know, I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I'm glad we came through that onto this side.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I appreciate you sharing that with us. And I know that must be, it's still probably very difficult. It was a traumatic event. And I think with trauma too, you know, we have to look at what the lessons are, like, especially, I think, I don't know if you could speak to this, but when, you know, there's a lot of people out there listening to this that will say, you know, I don't know how to forgive, and I want to forgive, but I don't know how. And I think that part of that is kind of obviously changing the story and looking at what lessons can come out of this. How can I do better from this? How can I help others through this? You know, what do you have any tips for people that are right now trying to forgive?
You know, I would say for me, honestly, movement is medicine. I truly believe that getting into your body and feeling it. I think the things that I've done with myself over the last 2 years have created a physical and mental environment that have allowed some of this to come out. If we're just constantly bound up and not moving and doing about things, things get stuck into our bodies. Right. So I think it's a combination of movement, breath, meditation, you know, and walking, for example. You know, if somebody walks or jogs, a lot of times it just kind of allows ideas to come forward, and we physically, we mentally process things through our physical bodies. Right. So I think movement is really important, and it can be a combination of yoga, or it could even just be walking. And I would say really it's compassion and time. Those have been the biggest things for me.
Right. But don't we have to also like acknowledge that you do have to kind of your thoughts, your cognitives, like the ways that you produce thoughts that could change, you know? I mean, I'm a big believer in therapy, obviously. And I'm a counselor myself, but I do believe that, and like you said, it could come from reading books. It could come from, but just getting knowledge, learning, understanding, educating yourself in different ways, I think really does help to change the narrative and maybe look at your situation from a different perspective and point of view and not as a victim. And I think that there's
right.
a lot to be said with kind of changing the thought process, the cognitive piece of it too, as well as moving. I mean, emotions is energy and motion, you know, and I agree with you. I think my whole life changed when I began to move and to have the time to it's almost a meditation to actually walk or run or hike or whatever that is. But also I just want to acknowledge that the cognitive piece also.
Yeah. Well, I think here's where a lot of people, I believe get caught up is they don't do the work. You know, it's one thing to listen to a podcast. It's one thing to read a book.
Right.
But the questions that, for example, if there's a question or an exercise that says, hey, you know, when you read this book, keep a diary handy and ask yourself these questions. Your book Rewired is a perfect example of that. At the end of
yes.
each chapter, there's 12 or 15 questions that mm-hmm. you can ask yourself. Do the work. You know, get
yes,
curious
I agree.
About yourself. I think there was an exercise I just practiced the other day, you know, that was do the five whys, you know, like you ask yourself why you practice something or why you drink or whatever the area mm-hmm. of inquiry is, and then just go five levels below that, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
like why do I practice yoga? Well, I practice yoga because it helps me live pain-free. Well, why do you experience pain? I experienced pain because there was injury in my body. Why was there injury in my body? Because I had accumulated tension. Why was there accumulated tension? Because I was not stretching properly. And why was I not stretching properly? I was never taught, you know. So
mm-hmm.
so then at that fifth level, I was like, okay, the answer is learn how to stretch and mm-hmm. and move your body correctly. So there's the answer. But sure, you know, yoga is a great practice for me to do. But always there's a way to go deeper and to really excavate it. But when somebody like, you know, Jack Canfield, who's really a deep intellectual thinker, has created some exercises for you,
mm-hmm.
it's a good idea to try them out. And you don't have to adopt them, but you might find something out about yourself that can set you free.
Absolutely. And I love what you said. And if anybody is taking anything away from this, hopefully everything, but it's really to put things into action. Action is key because with action, we get to experience things. And when we experience them, then we can decide, this really helps me, or this doesn't help me, or I learned this, or I found this out about myself. Whatever that is, it's we need that contrast. We need the action. If we're just sitting doing nothing and not applying it, like you said, then we don't have a contrast. We have nothing to gauge it. We have nothing to gauge it to. And I think it really allows people to understand themselves again on this very authentic core level, and then they could get to see really who they are, how they operate, what they want out of their lives, and of course gets them, you know, I think closer to their best life.
So, right. Yeah. We're all unique as snowflakes, and everybody has heard that a million times before, but I like to think of, you know, my recovery as kind of a buffet. And for example, I have tried the 12 step. There are a few steps that just don't work for me. You know, I continue to look for other areas of truth to continue to explore myself.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm on the same boat as you. Well, thank you, David. Thank you so much for being with us today and for this really important discussion. You can find David at davidrachford.com. It's DavidRachford. And his show is on iTunes, The Better Human Show. It's on Stitcher too. And thank you for being with us. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Stay well.